Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
This podcast is brought to you by Wise, the app that helps you manage your money internationally. With Wise, you have up to 40 currencies at your fingertips. You can receive money, pay bills, and send money across borders without hidden fees. You always get the real-time mid-market exchange rate. See exactly what you pay every time. Join millions of Wise customers worldwide. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. T's and C's apply.
Wir bei Vertex wissen, dass die Geschwindigkeit des globalen Handels zunimmt, was eine Steuerverwaltung komplexer macht. Und Ihre unternehmenseigenen Systeme sind nicht dafür ausgelegt, diese Steuerkomplexität zu bewältigen. Hier setzen wir mit unserer Plattform an, die Continuous Compliance ermöglicht. So erhalten Sie mehr Transparenz, mehr Genauigkeit und mehr Vertrauen in Ihre Steuerdaten. Sie wollen mehr über Continuous Compliance erfahren? Dann besuchen Sie vertexinc.com/de.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Rob Young. On this edition, Florida is counting the cost of Hurricane Milton after the storm tore through the US state. Some estimates suggest it could top $100 billion in damages. We will talk to the state's chief financial officer and to an insurance industry expert. We'll also hear why the new French government's attempt at cutting the nation's high level of borrowing has been met with horror by some. And we'll hear from young people in Portugal who could be offered their own lower tax rate to stay in the country rather than emigrate, as many do, to look for better paid work abroad.
In other countries in Europe, they have more attractive career paths, better wages that allow them to actually save money.
Well, don't forget you can contact us on WhatsApp or send us a voice note. The number you need is +44 33 06 78 30 33. And maybe you're one of those young people who feels you've got to leave your country for better paid work. Email us if you want to, world.business@bbc.co.uk. Well, we start in the United States, where Hurricane Milton has left a trail of destruction in the state of Florida. Milton smashed into the coast south of Tampa Bay and has maintained hurricane force winds as it crossed the Florida Peninsula. Several people are reported to have been killed, and more than 3 million homes and businesses are without power, while parts have no running water. There's also a warning of more flooding in coming days, so people are being asked not to return to their homes just yet. We are joined now by Jimmy Petronis, the chief financial officer of Florida. He oversees the state's finances and is a member of the cabinet, which is chaired by the state's governor. Welcome to the programme, Jimmy. First of all, just tell us where you are, what you can see around you, and whether you and your family are okay.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm in North Florida, so I'm about 100 miles off the coast of the Atlantic Ocean to Jacksonville. We're now traveling to St. Lucie County. Landfall of the tornado, the eye made landfall in Sarasota, Florida. That is south of Tampa. And I think as it happens, a lot of interest and focus was on the landfall in the eye of the storm, where it made its initial impact to the state. The outer bands at the other side of the state on the Atlantic coast in St. Lucie County, just directly north of Palm Beach, those areas were devastated by tornadoes. We had over 30 tornadoes touch down, about 130 tornado warnings. So to me right now, that's where the most amount of violent damage has taken place.
You say that some parts are devastated. What information do you have on the extent of the damage?
So there was a significant storm surge all along the Gulf Coast. This whole region had been hit a week earlier by Hurricane Helene, so it was still recovering. A significant amount of storm surge had created a lot of flooding along those coastal area homes. But as we had this storm that crossed through the state of Florida, is now in the Atlantic. Like I said, the area of St. Lucie was devastated by tornadoes. And there's not really a good way to prepare for a tornado As at least a hurricane, you know where it's coming, you know where the impact's going to be. So this was an area that was really caught by surprise.
Now, 3 million homes and businesses are without power. Presumably that makes it difficult for you to work out exactly the extent of the damage statewide, does it?
Yeah, so you're right, but daylight helps. And we've got 40,000 linemen that are working right now as we speak all over the state restoring power. My office also oversees urban search and rescue. We've got 1,600 urban search and rescue specialists throughout the state. They're embedded with trauma surgeons, structural engineers, search and rescue canines. So they'll be going actually from home to home, checking on the wellness and safety. And in some cases, you know, saving lives in the field where at times there may be an emergency surgery needed, as sometimes the violence of these storms and those reluctant to evacuate lead to challenging outcomes.
Do you have any idea yet how many people may have been left homeless by the hurricane?
No, not yet. You know, I think we're going to probably have the most, you know, surprise will be, again, the Atlantic coastal area where the tornadoes touched down. These were incredibly violent. And for example, in St. Lucie County, the sheriff of St. Lucie County, he's the head of law enforcement there. His entire office complex was destroyed by a tornado. And you would think this is the one individual and his team are the ones that are providing safety and security to the area. So, you know, we have brought resources in from all parts of the state to supplement the challenges that are faced with right now. But I know Governor DeSantis, this will be the first destination he's going to make is to St. Lucie County, and we're in pursuit of the exact same location.
Right. And when are those 3 million or so premises without power likely to have it restored? Presumably lots of power lines have come down, have they?
Yeah. So, you know, the good thing about it is this area, the Gulf Coast, Sarasota, where it made landfall, it wasn't that long ago. It was hit by Hurricane Ian. This was back in 2022. And so when we have started the whole process of rebuilding the grid, we harden it. So there's been a lot of undergrounding since then. There's also been a lot of concrete poles installed as opposed to wooden poles. So all this makes the restoration process much quicker. There's definitely where trees are down, those lines will have damage. I have not gotten any direct input of transmission line damage. But look, there's going to be some roads that are going to be washed out that will hamper some of the electrical restoration.
So it's a big rebuilding effort ahead then. How is all of that likely to be paid for, given that you're in charge of the state's purse strings?
Yeah, so you know, the state, for where we have a state obligation, we're in the best fiscal health we've ever been in the history of the state. We've got about $17 billion in reserves, and to compare, pre-COVID in 2020, we were about $4 billion in reserves. So the state has taken a real strong approach to increasing our fiscal health. But we also know because of inflation, everything costs more. So we're going to need to have more money in reserves. There'll be those partnered programs with the federal government through FEMA that will be a match program. A lot of the debris picking up services, that is a process covered by FEMA. In addition, we have an enormous amount of private insurance in the state of Florida. If you have a mortgage in the state of Florida, you must carry insurance on that mortgage. And as we have seen, this is more of what's called a windstorm event, not as much a flood event. So the primary insurance protection that homeowners have in Florida is windstorm coverage.
Thank you very much indeed. We'll let you get on your way to St. Lucie County. Thanks very much for talking to us. That's Jimmy Petronis there, who's the Chief Financial Officer for Florida. And let's talk about the insured losses then that Jimmy mentioned there. They could cost somewhere between $60 and $100 billion, according to analysts, while insurance rates longer term could increase to cover the cost of this year's claims. I've been talking to Sridhar Manyam, who is a Senior Director at AM Best. That is a credit ratings agency for the insurance industry.
It's still early days before we can make a complete, accurate assessment of the damage caused by Hurricane Milton. However, it is going to be one of the most destructive storms and orders of magnitude in terms of insured losses. So if you look at Hurricane Ian, it caused around $60 billion of insured losses. We think Hurricane Milton could cause comparable damage in terms of orders of magnitude, but the true magnitude is going to really emerge after the homeowners get back into their homes, assess the damages, and the insurance companies are also going to be under a lot of pressure because they have only a certain amount of claims adjusters. So they need some time to send these adjusters to figure out what the damages are and then pay out these losses. But it is going to be in tens of billions of dollars at least.
What about the insurance companies? How deep are their pockets and how would they be able to afford to pass the money on to businesses and homeowners who make claims on their policies?
That's a very good question because before the Florida insurance market was in the news a couple of years back, Florida in general is a very hurricane-prone state. And added to that, there was a lot of litigiousness which caused increase in losses. And all these factors made the large insurers a little bit risk averse. What happened was there's an insurance company called Citizens Insurance, which is an insurer of last resort, which is sponsored by the state of Florida. And that actually has become the largest insurer of the state, which means the citizens of Florida were finding it challenging to find insurance in the private market, and they had to go to Citizens in order to get a homeowner's insurance. So in fact, Citizens Property Insurance was, according to our estimate, had almost a 12% market share, had around $5 billion in premium in 2023, and it was the largest insurance company in Florida. So as it is, the risk appetite of private market was getting lesser, and we will have to see the ramifications of Hurricane Milton and how much more risk averse the private insurers are going to be in terms of providing insurance to Florida if you take these increasing climate risks into account.
Insurance companies have their own insurance companies, don't they? Reinsurers. How big is the risk that somewhere in this chain of insurance companies, there just won't be enough money to pay out? Or is that not something that people should be concerned about?
We think between the insurance industry and the reinsurance industry and the reinsurance mechanisms that have been organized by Citizens, and there's another reinsurance layer that comes called the Florida Hurricane Cat Fund. We think the industry in aggregate would have the capital to back their promises to policyholders. Having said that, there could be individual companies. So we might have to watch those companies carefully in terms of their ability to pay claims. But overall, in terms of the aggregate insurance industry, the reinsurance industry, the Florida Hurricane Cat Fund, the catastrophe bond market, etc. Overall, we think the industry would have the capital to pay the claims.
You mentioned before about the increasing climate risks that insurers, that we all are facing all the time. Do you think that insurers will continue to retreat from areas where there is a greater risk of stronger hurricanes, for example, or more severe flooding?
Yeah, we're seeing some of that happening already in terms of the reactions by insurance companies. We're seeing in other places like California, where there are a lot of wildfires. We've seen a lot of insurance companies retracting from that marketplace as well.
Sridhar Manyam there, Senior Director at AM Best. You're with World Business Report from the BBC World Service. Let's have a look at some of the stories that are moving financial markets today with Susanna Streeter from the UK brokers Hargreaves Lansdown. Hi, Susanna.
Hi, Rob.
Let's talk about some inflation data out of the United States, that index of the level of price rises, slightly lower than what was expected, which is good news for people who've been suffering with the cost of living crisis in the United States, potentially therefore means even lower interest rates to come.
Certainly, it does seem to show that inflation is heading in the right direction. That's downwards. And yes, it does mean that there is still, financial markets are still pricing in an interest rate cut for November. Although a week or so back, there was still speculation that there could be another supersized rate cut coming from the Federal Reserve, as we saw in September, those expectations really have fizzled away now because, as you say, we had this inflation number coming in and it was slightly higher than expected, coming in at 2.4%, 2.3% was expected. Nonetheless, it is the smallest year-on-year rise in inflation since February 2021. So certainly going in the right direction.
And the euro currency has weakened as well. Lowest level for a couple of months on interest rate expectations there as well. So in the rich world, certainly, the trend is of lower rates in the months and years ahead.
Yes, certainly. And in fact, the European Central Bank is expected to go faster, really, in terms of its rate cuts compared to, say, the UK, because of struggling economies across Europe. They really want to try and ensure that high borrowing costs are reduced to try and stimulate demand across the bloc. That's partly why you've seen the euro bit dip back. So certainly what you're seeing is inflation moving south. That is what so many companies and consumers really want to see after this era of painfully high borrowing rates.
Let's have a word about the pharmaceutical giant GSK now. It has attempted to draw a line under a long-running legal battle concerning alleged cancer caused by a heartburn remedy it sells called Zantac. It settled it for more than $2 billion. They have not accepted any fault as part of this settlement. The shares are up, though. Why is that?
Well, I think it's because shareholders think, look, this now means that there's a line drawn. This has been a long-running legal battle concerning alleged cancer related to this heartburn remedy, Zantac, which has, of course, now been discontinued, this one drug, though not Zantac in general, but this form of the drug, this past form. So now it's agreed to settle 93% of cases. I think there's a bit of a sigh of relief that perhaps now this is going to be in the rearview mirror. And now GSK's operational performance should be the key driver going forward. And execution has been pretty impressive of late, with two upgrades already in the bag this year.
All right. Thanks very much indeed. Susanna Streeter there from Hargreaves Lansdown. We're going to head to France now, where the new government is presenting its budget. But before we even knew all of the details, it was already being described by some as violent austerity. Now, France has been borrowing more money every year than it is supposed to, and the European Union has given the country a bureaucratic slap on the wrist. The new Prime Minister, Michel Barnier, is attempting to reduce the amount that France is borrowing, formerly known as the deficit, but he faces a financial and political balancing act. His centre-right government doesn't have a majority in the National Assembly because the far left came first in recent elections and the far right also did very well. Well, we're joined now by Thomas Michalski, Associate Professor of Economics at the HEC Business School in Paris. Welcome back to the programme, Thomas. So what is it in the budget then, or what do we think is in the budget that is proving so controversial with some?
So there are a couple of things. First of all, the budget even has its detractors within the current coalition because it's folding back on a lot of measures that were introduced by Macron. First of all, it might go back on lowering corporate taxes. It may reintroduce some taxes on richest citizens. Plus, it's going to remove part of subsidies for apprenticeships that improve the labor situations for young people. So that's one first of controversy. The second one that may really undermine the standing of the center-right government is the fact that they're going to revalue the pensions 6 months later, and that's going to allow for some savings. And that's not going to go very well with the retirees, who were a solid electoral base. Now, to keep in context and short, next year, everybody expects there are going to be new elections because Rassemblement National is going to...
That's the far-right anti-immigration national rally.
Exactly. National rally. And the retirees may vote perhaps instead for them.
Right. How urgent is it for France to reduce the amount that it is borrowing?
It's very very pressing because the deficit is hitting this year without any savings, 6.1% of GDP, which is huge. It's very surprising. Nobody quite understands how this might have happened. There were the Olympics, so perhaps higher GDP growth. GDP growth wasn't lower than expected as it was at the beginning of the year. And it's simply that there was an explosion of some health expenditures since COVID, also expenditures of local governments, elections added to this. But it's still unclear how we arrived at this situation, which is by any means a catastrophic one and cannot continue.
Now, the parliament, the National Assembly is so divided. Do you think that such a fractured political scene can really get the finances sorted out in a sustainable way when they disagree on pretty much everything?
Surprisingly, perhaps, yes, because France remains a centre-right country if you look at the votes, who votes for which bloc. In fact, the Mouvement National, Rassemblement National of Party of Marine Le Pen, is quite very happy that it's somebody else that will do the budget cuts. So, in a sense, everybody understands, 60% of the population understands they have to be done. Nobody wanted to do them. And that was also the case under the previous couple of years of Macron in government.
So it's going to be fascinating to see whether the budget does get approved. Thanks so much for joining us. That's Thomas Michalski there from the HEC Business School in Paris. We're going to stay in Europe now and go to Portugal, where young people could be in for a new tax break from next year. The government is proposing to cap income tax for under 35s for up to a decade rather than the existing five-year period. And those without university degrees will also be eligible for the first time. It's part of the government's plan to stop young people leaving the country to work elsewhere. In recent years, tens of thousands of youngsters have emigrated, with the average youth salary standing at about €1,800 a month. So what do Portugal's young adults make of it? Well, earlier we spoke to 27-year-old Marta Silva, who lives in the capital, Lisbon, about the idea.
I think it's good, and I also appreciate the fact that I will get to benefit from this tax break longer if I decide to stay. But I don't think that this is going to solve our main structural issues. And I can see from my own friend group, the people that I've studied with, and even from my family members, that we are still leaving because bottom line is that in other countries in Europe, they have more attractive career paths, better wages that allow them to actually save money. So I think the issues that we face here are difficult to solve. But for example, I don't think that we are tackling the housing crisis almost at all. The government has approved some measures for young people on this regard, so under 35 years old too. But when we look at it, they are applicable for people who already have a considerable amount of money or whose parents can help them get their down payment, etc. So again, not the majority of young Portuguese people either. Ultimately, I think that even though Portugal is growing economically each year, and we do feel that when we add in the housing crisis, the fact that we don't have enough public school teachers, young kids barely have access to daycare, etc., we will try to seek other ways to build a future. And for many of us, and for many of the people that I see around me, the only way to do that is to leave.
27-year-old Marta Silva there. Well, we're joined from Lisbon by the BBC's Alison Roberts. Hi, Alison. So just talk us through then why people have been leaving and where they've broadly been going to.
Well, Marta summed it up so well there. The two main factors here are Portugal's relatively low salaries and then rocketing costs, particularly for housing in the cities, above all Lisbon and Porto. And it's the combination of those two factors that are really hurting young people in particular. And as you mentioned, there are tens of thousands ever since the euro debt crisis have been going abroad, above all to seek higher salaries, which are often two, three or even four times their level of in Portugal in some sectors.
And so is this idea of a tax break likely to reverse this exodus of people, perhaps even entice those who left a number of years ago back?
Well, there is anecdotal evidence from people that say, this is a good measure. It could even persuade, someone I know or my girlfriend to come back or even to come here in the case of some European Union citizens, because, of course, this doesn't just apply to Portuguese. It would also apply to anyone who has official residence here and who is submitting their tax declaration in Portugal. So it could bring people here. There are, of course, a number of other measures to attract usually rather richer foreigners to come and live in Portugal. But this is for everyone up to the age of 35. And the difference with the scheme that currently exists and is in place is that it is for anyone up to 35 and not just someone just starting out in the world of work, because at the moment it is for 5 years, but it's only for people who are starting out in work. In this case now, it's for anyone who is under the age of 36, so anyone up to 35.
So is this being billed then by the people in power who are proposing it as a way of keeping young people or perhaps of attracting those from elsewhere in the European Union to come to the country to replace those Portuguese who've left?
No, it's very much to retain people. This is a theme, really, that many people feel very deeply. You know, they see their children or friends going abroad when they really feel that they needn't. Of course, there are cases when people might go abroad to get extra experience and then even to come back. And there is actually a program in place called Regressar, Return, specifically to encourage emigrants to come back, hopefully with all that extra experience that they've earned abroad. But this is specifically to keep people in Portugal. And that's what the government says that it is hoping it will do. It has rather amended its original plans, which were for a cap on income tax. It's made it more like the existing scheme, which was put forward by the socialist government, the socialists now in opposition, and they were insisting that this must be made more progressive. And it tapers down to the age of 35, so that when you come to the 11th year, you no longer get that benefit. And there's no cliff edge when you reach 36 that suddenly you're paying a huge amount more tax, which of course would result in situations within companies, for example, where you'd have one person who was 1 year older than the other who would be paying much more tax. That would be a very complicated situation. So the idea is to avoid that.
Yeah, I suppose that might cause a bit of friction within the workplace. Very briefly, do we know what older people who maybe don't have kids won't benefit from this make of it?
I think there are mixed reactions. There are people who say this just isn't fair. You know, I'm 40 and I, you know, had to pay tax all these years. And now I find that these youngsters are getting extra benefits. And there are others who say, no, we really need to keep young people in Portugal and we need them to be able to start life in circumstances that are ever more difficult in terms of their housing costs and other costs.
Thank you, Alison. That's the BBC's Alison Roberts there in the Portuguese capital, Lisbon. And that is about it from this edition of World Business Report. Don't forget our two daily podcasts are always available on the BBC website and wherever you usually get your downloads.
This podcast is brought to you by Wise, the app that helps you manage your money internationally. With Wise, you have up to 40 currencies at your fingertips. You can receive money, pay bills, and send money across borders without hidden fees. You always get the real-time mid-market exchange rate. See exactly what you pay every time. Join millions of Wise customers worldwide. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. T's and C's apply.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten, für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI for people.